Welcome back to Podcast Recovery, everyone. I am your host, David O. And today I'm joined by my very, very special guest, Bill. How are you doing today, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Busy. Life is always busy.
Yes.
Where are you from?
Catonsville.
Catonsville?
Well, what? Glen Burnie, Catonsville. 6 years old, I came to Catonsville.
Okay.
So as far back as I can remember, it's always been Catonsville. It's always been hometown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when were you first introduced to recovery?
Probably 13 years old. In 1985, before I found recovery, and I've done some research on Narcotics Anonymous now. Mm-hmm. On the west side, I started at a place called Epic House.
Yep.
So at 13, 14 years old, my parents found some weed. They panicked. They sent me to, in my eyes, they panicked.
Yeah.
And sent me to the Epic House Counseling Center. And at the Epic House Counseling Center, you can walk in the front, check in with the receptionist, go upstairs for your, you know, juvenile counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's two ways to come. You can either come back the same way you came in, mm-hmm. or you can go back down the back steps, which led back through a bunch of bikers and a bunch of smoke and pool table and couches.
Yep.
And I would always go out that way. I had no idea what it was,
mm-hmm.
but I would always go out that way. There was a couple really attractive brunettes with leather pants. I was 14 years old. I was like, that's the way I'm going out.
Yep.
And lo and behold, it was the beginnings of Narcotics Anonymous on the west side.
Nice.
And that venue was important to a lot of people for a long time. People came from all over the state to go to that venue, to go to that place. And when I finally reached where I thought I had a problem and went away to rehab long after everybody else was telling me that I had a problem, when I came home, I knew where to go. And I went to the Epic House, and they held meetings there every night of the week, except for Thursday night, which is, of course, the night that I showed up there. And a gentleman named Baltimore Bill drove past and said, "Yo, hey, you looking for a meeting?" And I said, "Yeah." And I hopped in his truck, and we went out to what would become my home group.
God, the 80s were a different time.
Yeah. And we went out to, and he didn't stay. He was actually going to buy a tie for somebody who had passed away in the program. So he dropped me off. I went inside, and Rodney M was sharing, was celebrating his first year.
Jeez.
And Josh, I guess I can say his name, he's gone. Josh Smith was sitting next to me.
Hmm.
And those were my first contacts in Narcotics Anonymous. Both those gentlemen are passed now, including Baltimore Bill.
Hmm.
So the dark side of Narcotics, the dark side of addiction didn't really hit me around Narcotics Anonymous. Hmm. I was very blessed for a long time.
Yeah.
But when it did, a lot of people at that time passed away. It was probably about 5-6 years in before anybody close to me passed away. And then in that year, you know, those three people, you know, passed away. And those are my early connections.
Nice. And how long have you been clean?
Right now it's been 9.5 years. Yeah. So I came around, that was all in, that was in 95 when I originally got clean, mm-hmm. and I stayed clean for 12 years. And I was at an anniversary last night, you were there.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was talking about the difference between, living clean and being in the program, which, make no mistake, was wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
When you don't know, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I knew. And it was wonderful to be clean. It was wonderful to live vicariously through everybody else's recovery and hang around with people that had so much information and had worked steps, and to think, because I was, you know, and they did give me all that information.
Mm-hmm.
They say you can't get this thing by osmosis. I swear to this day, I almost did. I really, really almost did. But I had no idea what working the steps for myself would mean. So when he was sharing last night, I was really relating with the fact that I've lived both ways, and I didn't know anything was wrong when I was, and there was always going to be time. I never stood in opposition to the steps. I championed the steps. I would listen to people share and be like, "That dude, whew, he needs to work the steps." I believed in him. But the disease is very cunning and very baffling in my life. Mm-hmm. Our literature says it. But I found a way to minimize my issues compared to your issues. So you needed to work the steps. You needed this wonderful transformation.
Yep.
But I was okay.
Yep.
You know, because the truth is, just being clean, my life changes so dramatically that it's very easy for me to say.
Oh, yeah. Just taking the drugs out makes a profound difference.
I'm good. I'm wonderful. What do you mean I need to do this? And I'm fantastic.
Yep.
What's the old saying? Nothing changes. Nothing changes.
Mm-hmm.
I never got that.
Yep.
Everything changed when I stopped using.
Oh, yeah.
Everything. What do you mean nothing changes, nothing changes?
Yep.
Now I understand.
Yeah.
And it's in retrospect. So, Yeah, so the difference now is, so after 12 years, I relapsed, and the relapse was horrendous. There's no other way to put it. It was 6 years of, it wasn't even about the use. It was about the use, but it was about the thought patterns. It was about being completely powerless all over again.
Mm-hmm.
A guy called me about it to ask me questions about his second step last week, and we talked for over a half hour, and when I hung up the phone, that word power, just kept the power that my disease has over me when I put something in me is unparalleled.
Yeah.
I had no control for 6 years. I thought for the first year, I'm older, I'm wiser, I'm not going to let it get that bad. I'm smarter. I know what to do. I know. And it doesn't have to go to the bitter ends. And
yep.
I don't have to turn. And 6 years later, I was sitting in my truck considering putting it on the railroad tracks because I could not stop.
Yep.
All over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I had almost lost hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the truth is I had lost hope. I had lost hope in me, but that's the magic of the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. For me, you can't not see the hope there.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was talking to this gentleman the other day when he called was that was the power.
Mm-hmm.
That was the restoration of sanity for me was believing in you, believing in Jack, believing in Martin, believing in people that came while I was out there that were excited about recovery again, and watching them talk about things that I remembered, but I could not tap into anymore.
Yep.
And it was through watching them and rooting for them that I started to hear that voice that I needed to hear again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's going to be okay. If you just stay clean, it's going to be okay. It's, so it was a very difficult 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember doing activities during those 6 years that I had done for the 12 years prior and not enjoying them. And that's the other part that I don't think I don't talk about it much, but even in between the binges, cause I'm a binge user, even in between the binges, I enjoyed nothing.
Yeah.
There was nothing in my life that excited me anymore. I was just hanging on till the next run.
Yep.
I was just putting money away or scheming, and I was fighting it the whole time, and I was trying to convince myself, you know what, you can pay that, you need to do this with that money, and the whole time I was doomed. I was that. I mean, that's the power that the disease has over me when I'm using, when I'm active.
Alright, well, so take us back to the beginning, man. Like, how did it all get started, man?
With me, very simple. Much like everybody else, I thought it was a good idea to cut school and go out back to Catonsville High School and smoke weed on the Woodland Thurman Theater, that theater, concrete that they had back there, and then the standpipe underneath. We went and created some really, really interesting places to get high. Me, Newman, Jughead, these were the guys that were... And then I'd come out. It was weird for me because I would come out and then I would go to play baseball. I'd go to play basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, from the very first time I used, I still wanted to do those things, but I wanted to do them high.
Yeah.
It didn't excite me to do those things anymore if I wasn't high.
I could never play sports high.
Really?
It was terrible. It was terrible. Like, Eric loved it. Carly loved it. But, for whatever reason, I would get high and I'd be like, I don't want to do any of this. I'm like running around. Like, no, I don't. I just, nope.
Mm-hmm. Now that would probably be the case. I'd just be like, all right, I'm just going to stay here. But then it was so new and it was so fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And then during my relapse even, it was... I was telling my girlfriend the other day that marijuana was like my maintenance drug. In between the binges, I would just smoke ridiculous amounts of marijuana just to feel the way I needed to feel to hold off and wait for the next binge.
Yep.
And even during that period of time, it was nothing excited me. There was nothing that I wanted to go do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many things in my life that I was convinced I could never, it's the paradox. I was convinced that I could never enjoy those things without weed, without using.
Oh yeah.
And these things are the things that I've loved. I've loved since I was a kid. I don't even know why I love them. I just love them.
Mm-hmm.
And music and the sports that I play and the relationships that I have, all these things I had lost.
Yeah.
That was the thing in the relapse. Mm-hmm. The use was the use, but everything that I was connected to, I was disconnected from. And that was the pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still get emotional thinking about it because I was so distant from myself. I was so distant from the person that I had become. And I was right back to lost, absolutely lost, and feeling like I shouldn't have been lost, and having the information that I didn't have as a kid to not be lost, but still not being able to tap back into that either, knowing the power in the rooms and not being able to, sitting in the rooms, still going to meetings and knowing that I was leaving to go get high and unable to open my mouth.
Yeah.
That is, to this day, the worst feeling I've ever felt, knowing that all I had to do was open my mouth and say something, and I don't know what will happen.
Is it true that a head full of NA will ruin a good high?
Yeah. Well, I think wisdom comes with that. Age comes with that. A family will ruin a good high. I mean, the things that I've achieved, knowing that I can do better is what ruined my high.
Oh, I
knew I could do better, and I couldn't all over again. When I was a kid, 25 years old, I talked about the wreckage because everybody talks about the wreckage of their past when they come in. So I adopted that. I was like, yeah, the wreckage. I didn't have any wreckage. My parents had wreckage.
Yeah.
Everybody that knew me had wreckage. I had never obtained anything to wreck.
Yeah.
I was just.
You created chaos around you, but not directly for you.
And everybody was rooting for me and everybody was trying to help me. And I was just like, okay, maybe, maybe not. I was just. And so when I relapsed, that wreckage, that was mine. That was mine. And that was my children looking at me, you know, with complete misunderstanding, like, why can't you just stay home? You know, asking me, Dad, just stay home. And me saying, I have to go.
Yeah.
You know, and not wanting to go, and but still having to go and wanting to go. It was, and, you know, I thought, for some reason, I thought about this morning. Jack says, Jack says, I shot dope for 30 years. I did the math one time. It's actually 29 years.
Oh, I know. He's full of shit.
But but I did that for 6 years. And that, for 6 years, every day, waking up with a desire to not use, convincing myself the night before, I'm not going to do this again tomorrow. And every day, knowing that I was going to do it.
Yeah.
Every day, waking up, and at some point during the day, I used to call it the hot, wet blanket. It's like somebody would take a big wet blanket and just lay it over the top of me, and the only way I could get it off was to go use. And that's what I mean about I lost hope. I didn't know how to get that off of me. I was fine in between, and I wanted it again, and I would go to meetings, and but when somebody laid that thing on me, you know, when it was laid on me, it's, there was no choice. There was no thought process. It was just, I gotta go.
And
I really don't know the difference. In 2014, why finally in 2014? I don't know. I think that's maybe part of my message is when they say keep coming back, you know, they weren't talking, you know, when I say that, I'm not talking to you.
Yeah.
I'm talking to me.
Yeah.
Now, with clean time again, I love saying that. But at some point, I was saying it to people and not hearing it from me.
Yeah.
So I just kept coming back, even though I didn't believe, even though I didn't. And I did. I just started to listen to people. And again, that second step, restorationist, I never, make no mistake about it, I never gained the illusion of power. You know, I knew from the moment I relapsed, I was in a bad situation.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I didn't think I could. I thought I could control it to at least the point where it didn't get that bad, which was ridiculous now looking back.
Yeah.
But I never thought for one second, I got this. It's party time. It's, you know, just was like, I'm screwed. And when I came back, it was probably a year and a half. It was actually during my fifth step that I shared with my sponsor about a year and a half. And that part of the fifth step that says, is there anything else that you haven't covered? Is there anything else that needs to be said? Anything else that wasn't brought up? And I told my sponsor, I don't believe. I still think I'm going to use. I still think I'm going to let everybody down. I still don't believe that. I still believe I'm going to die alone in a hotel room with a bag of dope on the table that I knew I shouldn't do. That's going to be the end of my life. And that was just festering inside of me. And he very dismissively looked up from the shit. Sorry. Very dismissively looked up from the page. And he's known me for, at that point, 25 years. And he looked up from the page and he said, huh, that's not what I see. And he looked back. He dismissed it.
Yeah.
He absolutely dismissed it. And at first was like, hey, I just shared this thing.
Yeah.
And I like to think today when that thought comes, and it still comes every once in a while, I dismiss it. The same way that he dismissed it that day.
Yeah.
So, again, and that's part of the step work that I could never get through osmosis. That's an experience, one line, one sentence from my sponsor, one reaction to something that I said that that I can't get from somebody else's experience.
Yeah.
And that's the importance for me. The fifth step to me was always, I don't know how we got on the fifth step, but was always a bridge between four and six. I'm a smart guy. It's just a great, you sit down, you share it.
Yep, it's a great step.
The fifth step was everything to me. It was one, I did that. Two, it's where I realized that I minimized my issues against yours. We talked about that earlier. And that it doesn't matter what my issues are. They're mine.
Yep.
They belong to me.
Yep.
So I should be blessed that they're not the things that I see that other people have to deal with. But instead, I say, okay, well, I'll have time. I'll get to them. They're not that bad. They belong to me. And I'm the only one that can address them. I'm the only one that can put them on the table. I'm the only one that can ask for help in those areas. And that's what I didn't do the first time. Why would I have to do it? They weren't that bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know. And the big three today are still the big three.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're still the
Always.
Big three.
Yeah.
But I say it's the big five, but the real big three are still, and I'm a little bit better, you know. The main thing that exposed to me was it talks in our literature about it, puts them under a street light. And I can see them clearly.
Yep.
And I know now when I'm acting out on them. I know when I'm approaching them. And I know when they're defeating me, too. But I'm not defeated by them.
Yeah.
There was a period of time I just came to the very quiet belief that that's who I am. And that's where I suffer. And I'm completely unable to change those things. And in the fifth step, and then in the sixth step, I realized it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
There is a possibility of change here. If I want to address these things, I can. And I only know that because he did it and she did it. And I've heard for years people talking about these things that they've been able to change through practice.
Yeah.
And then somewhere along there, I got a sponsee, and that changed the game also.
Oh, yeah.
And then I got another one and started taking them through the steps. And this unbelievable new understanding of the step work came to me that, again, I could have never obtained through listening to other people's experience.
Yeah.
Just it's impossible. And I still can't explain the power in the steps. I can't explain what I just know that it's an amazing process. And it's different today. The reading last night was on the 12th step, and it says that there are a lot of different types of spiritual awakenings, but they all have two characteristics. One is an end to loneliness.
Yep.
And the second is a sense of direction.
Yep.
And I am far from alone today. You know, I'm far from alone. And I found my purpose and my direction. And at a year and a half, I didn't get that again. So back to keep coming back. At 2 years, I didn't have that. At 3 years, I didn't have that. Somewhere around that point, through doing pretty much nothing. I mean, when I say nothing in a great way, because I get a lot of great ideas. I get a lot of wonderful ideas. Yep. I could do this. And a lot of times, I'm just like, no. Don't do anything. And when I don't do anything, usually the correct path presents itself.
Yep.
Through someone else, through prayer, through meditation, whatever, it just presents itself. It's like, oh my gosh, that same street light, there it is. So I practiced doing nothing for almost 3 years, going to meetings, listening, opening my mind, doing step work, being open to sponsor guys, staying clean, and then waiting for, I didn't even know what I was waiting for.
Yep.
But I found my purpose and I found my direction and I didn't see it coming and I didn't seek after it and I didn't try to make it happen and I didn't manipulate anything to get it to thing and it's and I enjoy my life today.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy the lack of loneliness and the sense of direction that every spiritual awakening has in common.
Yeah.
And it's repetitive and it's almost monotonous. It's just it just keeps coming.
Of course. That's life.
Yeah. No, I mean driving down the road with nothing particularly good happened yesterday, you know, but I was just driving down the road at some point and it's a wonderful thing where you can say nothing good happened today and it's a wonderful day. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of those days where I think you and I even argued about it one time over at the house. You said something to the effect that if you're telling me you never had a bad day, you're full of shit. And I was sitting there like, I should probably stay quiet here. I was like, David, I haven't had a bad day in at that time, I think, in 8.5 years.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
After that relapse, after doing to myself what I did to myself and not being able to get out of that place, whatever today brings, I'm in.
Yeah.
Whatever it brings.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's all, you know, I'm just saying whatever it is, I enjoy my feelings today. Mm-hmm. I enjoy my emotions.
Oh, yeah.
They come, man. They come in waves. And I don't know, old buddy Jeff, and when he first got clean, he was like real emotional. He's like, what is this? It's like, dude, you're an emotional guy. Mm-hmm. Embrace it.
Yeah.
He was like, what? And I realized, again, I wasn't talking to him. I was talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been an emotional guy. I've always felt things very deeply.
Mm-hmm.
It's who I am. It's a big part of who I am.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a bad thing.
No.
And I ride those emotions today. I can be riding down the road, listening to a song. I can be in a conversation. I can be doing a podcast and have to fight the tears off because of the gratitude that I feel just to be alive. And mm-hmm. this doesn't go on forever. We're here for a limited time.
Yep.
You know, I think a lot about death, not in a bad way, just of now to be like, I don't have that much time left. You know, mm-hmm. and I enjoy this life
yep.
that I'm living. And mm-hmm. I enjoy the relationships that I have with people. And I enjoy when my daughter calls from North Carolina and says, hey, Dad, I need a favor. So what do you need?
Yep.
What can I do?
Yep.
How can I help? And I should probably do more. It's part of my big three is, you know, I've never been the father that I wanted to be. And she's older now, so I don't know how to do that. But so it's I try to be a good person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and today I've always tried to be a good person. Today I just have more tools to do it.
Yeah,
being able to see myself coming, being able to be open minded when confronted with something, when somebody sets a boundary, and this has all happened in recovery this time, and going defensive and initially being able to be like, hey, that's probably a cause for concern that you just got that defensive about
mm-hmm.
it, and giving that some credence to say, okay. What do I need to do? Mm-hmm. How do I need to look at this?
Yeah.
Because, you know, yeah, so it's all a big learning process. I'm 52 years old. And one thing I do like about, and it gets uncomfortable sometimes because I want to be confident and I want to feel
yeah.
good about my life. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
I don't know. It's a strange thing. I love my recovery. There's more than I can do. I love what I do for a living. There's more than I can do. There's much more that I can learn mm-hmm. and that I can do. I have a long way to go
mm-hmm.
and a short time to get there. It's an old song from Smokey and the Bandit. But there's a long way to go, but what a wonderful journey to be on.
Oh yeah.
What a wonderful thing to be trying to, and surrounded by other people who are trying to do the same thing. Just enjoy my life, because at the end of the day, I say this all the time to my sponsees, that's really what this is about for mm-hmm. me, is how do I take all these things, good, bad, and indifferent, everything that's ever happened in my life, everything that I suffer from, how do I take all that information, everyone that I've ever lost, everyone that I've ever cared about, how do I take all that information and apply it to the day and enjoy my life?
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody's going to enjoy it for me.
Yeah.
I can let that stuff crush me. I can let the feelings and emotions drive me to do something. Or I can just simply realize that all those things that have happened to me have led me to this place right
yeah.
now, right here.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not going to have fun, if I'm not going to enjoy my life, what am I doing?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's the perspective again. So I talked about the bad side of that 6-year relapse. That's the perspective that it's given me.
Oh yeah.
Is one, you know, about not having a bad day, but I mean,
when you're in the middle of it, it's impossible to see the other side, and like it's like being in the middle of a tunnel. Like that you can't necessarily see what way forward and what way back.
That's a very good analogy.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're finally outside of the tunnel, you're just like, how was I stuck in there so long? All I had to do was just keep going.
Well, all those things I told you I enjoyed doing, playing board games with my girls and stuff like that. It's a very good analogy. They were still there. I was still trying to do
mm-hmm.
it, but I couldn't. I was looking straight ahead to whatever, and they were still just off in my peripheral.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the crazy part. The thing that when I was writing my step work that I realized is I played every Friday night. I had two stepdaughters and my daughter. And every Friday night we would play Upwards and different mm-hmm. board games. And you know how special it is? They were 16, 17, and 15. 15, 17, and 18.
Yeah. Getting some teenagers to do a game night.
And we're playing board games and laughing. I mean, belly laughing, having a great time. And I looked forward to it. And I knew how special it was. Mm-hmm. And from the very first moment that I picked up, before it even got bad, it was like, how long do I have to do this?
Mm-hmm.
It changed
everything. Yep.
So, and I'm ashamed of that. I'm ashamed to say that, but that's the power that the disease of addiction has over me.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you about, so you have two different stints of clean time mm-hmm. / recovery. What was different in like that first surrender versus the surrender in 2014?
Oh, we kind of talked about it already. I didn't know a lot. You mm-hmm. know, I was just a dumb
kid. How old were you at the first one?
25.
25?
Yep. Yeah, 25. And I mean, it gotten really bad for the 2 years prior to it, but, It actually came around when I was 24, and finally, after about I don't even call it a relapse. I was around for maybe 3 or 4 months and got a cold. You know what I mean? It was like, oh, I got to get high.
Yep.
I got a cold.
Yep.
And I always enjoyed using when I had a cold because, mm-hmm. you know, it would make me feel better.
So that's a, like, sick thing. Dude, I did the same thing. I'd be like, okay, if I have germs inside me, if I drink enough alcohol, it'll kill anything that's in my blood. Yeah. And, like, that's just the insane thinking that we have.
I don't want to feel like this. Oh, I get high. You know, mm-hmm. So that happened, and then I came back, and I was like, and that's the confusion of recovery, and if anybody's listening, that you know, I was like, I can't tell anybody, mm-hmm. I can't tell anybody in Narcotics Anonymous that I use narcotics. It's a ridiculous way of thinking. I was,
yeah,
you know, but after a couple of days, I was like, well, this isn't working, and so I finally got clean at 25, and again, I met some people and the fellowship and the events in my home group and learning how to have fun, mm-hmm. that was the same both times. That was a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Martin talks about it a lot. I talk about it a lot. Learning to have fun in recovery. If I wasn't having a blast, I wouldn't still be here.
Yeah.
I don't care how many spiritual principles and how good it may be.
Yeah.
If I'm not enjoying what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I learned how to have fun. I learned how to, you know, we would stay up and play spades. We were young, Karen wasn't young, but she was one of my first connections in Narcotics Anonymous. And we would play spades till 4 o'clock in the morning
mm-hmm.
and then go to work the next morning at 7 o'clock in the morning.
And mm-hmm.
so it was just a lot of crazy behavior, but crazy behavior clean.
Yeah.
And then I met Kelly, and then my recovery focus. She was met the woman I would marry, and she was HIV positive. Mm. So that greatly and vastly changed my existence because I was absolutely in love with her. We knew that we only had limited time.
Mm.
At the time, we only expected to have. She was 7 years positive when I met her. We only expected to have like 2 or 3 years. We wound up having 8 or 7.
Yeah,
and. I don't know, and then again, it was one of my character assets is that I'm caring and I'm loyal and I'm loving and I'm a caregiver and a caretaker and all those things, which are wonderful things. However, I can lose myself in those things, mm-hmm. and I can get my self-worth and my esteem from those things. And it's easy to look back. I don't regret any of it. Don't get me wrong, but I lived for her,
mm-hmm.
you know, for a lot of years. It was, you know. I lived to make sure that there was, you know, food on the table, things like that, like everybody does. But mm-hmm. outside of that, I lived for, you know, I lived for the day that she was going to pass. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything that I did was planning for that day that we didn't talk about. We didn't talk about it openly. So that was much different than this time. And then, that was in 2001. She passed. I had 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
She had 7 years. And it was the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. It carried me through that. But also prior to her passing, I didn't realize at the time, but I was already carried through it. You know, there was a mm-hmm. transformation in her over that 7 years. I mean, recovery is a wonderful thing to experience. It's a wonderful thing to go through. If you have a significant other, someone that you love, and to watch them go through
mm-hmm.
recovery,
yeah.
You know, as painful it is to watch somebody that you love go through addiction,
mm-hmm.
if you haven't had the experience of watching someone go through recovery, it's just as uplifting as that is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And it was absolutely amazing. And it was absolutely amazing in her passing. We talked a little bit about perspective in her passing, to be there by her side and to know that she was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how.
Yeah.
I don't pretend to this day to know how she was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that whatever work, whatever faith that she had, whatever belief in her higher power, she was not afraid, you know, at the end. And that was amazing because I knew her and she was afraid of everything when we first met. When I first met her, she would wear her hair over her face to hide behind.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman wound up going into schools and auditoriums in front of kids to talk about the dangers of drug addiction, unprotected sex, HIV, with her hair pulled back, sit in front of, you know, and I'm like, Jesus. So it was an amazing thing to watch. So I guess it's not that unfamiliar, is when I came back, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
I was looking for that same thing. I was looking for that same miracle.
Yeah.
That I saw in her, and the people in the rooms, and I found Jack, and I found Martin, and mm-hmm. I found Carl, and Carl's gone now.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make the miracle any less.
No, I know.
For 18 months, getting off topic, so that's the difference. There was a lot of things during that period of time that were very different. The rooms weren't.
Mm-hmm.
The step work wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
The need for connection wasn't.
Yeah.
And when I came back, I needed all those things all over again. I needed to be reconnected. And out of nowhere comes this guy, Carl, and he's talking baseball, and I'm a baseball guy, and I grew up, my father was a coach, and his father was a coach, and he was a catcher, and I was a mm-hmm. catcher. And most people you talk baseball with, it's like, yeah, okay, you know a little bit.
Yeah.
But he knew. You know? So we got to talking, and he drugged me out begrudgingly to the softball field. And then he was going down and picking up guys from the Hum just to get a game going on, the Helping Up Mission.
Mm-hmm.
And he would bring them out, like, packed in his car, and we'd play ball. And from that, somehow, we started a co-ed softball team and a men's Friday night team. And I was too old to be doing it, and I dreaded it.
Yeah.
I absolutely dreaded, but I had a blast.
Yeah.
And a lot of the connections that I made, and that was, I guess I had a little under a year at the time, and those connections I still have today, those mm-hmm. connections of people that came out and again, learning how fun again, and reconnecting with these things that I always loved, even though it hurt now. It didn't hurt back when, mm-hmm. now it hurt. And unfortunately, the reason I'm telling the story is, unfortunately, he would relapse about, 6 or 7 months after we started. He had 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And he was gone within the next 6 months.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember the last time I saw him, he was knocking on death's door, and I was just like,
yeah. Phew. Yeah. That doesn't change the fact that he changed my life.
Absolutely.
Profoundly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the connections that I made were through that team. And then I felt the responsibility to keep it going after he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Joey came along, and Joey was the next coach, and
mm-hmm.
it was obvious, and it's a great story, because it was obvious to me that he was the next coach.
Yes.
And I said, Joey, you're the next coach. He said, no, I'm not. I don't want to be in charge of people, and I don't want, and he was very, unsure about it, and he was the perfect choice.
Oh, yeah.
And I think within 6 months, he got a position at work where he was like, they want me to be a supervisor, they want me in charge of people.
There you go.
Isn't that ironic?
Mm-hmm.
You're perfect for it.
Yep.
You know, so again, this, who knows where this road goes?
Oh, yeah.
Who knows where, what beautiful things are coming? Who knows what horrible things are coming? I want to be, and right now, I can honestly say that whatever comes down the pipe, I'm better prepared to deal with it.
Yeah.
And better prepared to see a positive in it.
Mm-hmm.
And to realize, whatever's going to come is going to come.
Yeah, that actually
talk about powerlessness. So it's coming.
Oh yeah, yep. Life is happening. Things are just moving with the universe, and eventually we're going to be on that path. But like one of the things that I talk with my sponsee about all the time, and it's like something you're talking about, is right sizing your thinking and your emotions, because like we either want to like make it huge or minimize it. So how do you Like, what tools do you use to right size your emotions in those situations when days, some days are more difficult than others, blah, blah, blah. But like, how do you manage? Like,
that was the just for day this morning. Yeah. It was touching on that. It's just like, how you deal with the roller coaster of emotions mm-hmm. and feelings and stuff like that. And that's where, you know, I don't have any control over how I feel about things. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know. I have control over how I still do nothing. Mm-hmm. I still practice doing nothing.
Yeah.
When the emotions are real strong. And sometimes I just let them flow. I just don't fight them anymore.
Yep.
You know, it's one of those things where I don't know why certain things bother me that don't bother other people. I don't know why things that other people struggle with, I handle with relative ease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still don't have any understanding of how, you know, the universe works. I work. I just know that I'm not that big a deal. I'm not that important. However, in my little circle, in my
I'm going to call you out. I'm going to call you out a little bit, man. Like, I think you're minimizing yourself a little bit. Like, you are important, man.
Well,
like,
thank you. But yeah. But am I? You know,
absolutely. I mean? The all-wise Herb. Like always talks about the ripples in the pond, and like they're always constantly like interacting with everything around us. And just like you said, with Carl and everybody who's passed, their ripples impacted our lives at some point, and that momentum doesn't change, it doesn't go away. It just gets transferred into us, and so absolutely, like. And like I was thinking about this the other day.
I think I'm riding other people's ripples. I guess that's the way I look at it. Yeah. I'm still riding their ripples. And if I'm creating some ripples, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. It would be wonderful. But right now I'm still riding everybody else's. And again, you talked about right sizing,
mm-hmm.
right? There might be some minimization there, but the truth is the people that are recovering today would be recovering whether I was here or not. The people that passed are going to be passed. They're going to pass whether I'm here or not.
Oh,
I can't take credit for one. I can't take credit for the other. However, if you're in my life, I'm in a better position to be a good person in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is enough.
Yes.
That has to be enough
because
that's all I can really control.
Mm-hmm.
So if that creates some ripples, then you know, ride it because, you know, it's a fun ride. It's a good ride.
I have a fun question for you because I don't know if you listen to Terry's podcast.
I did not.
She
Terry H.
Yeah. She talked about you a little bit and how you guys were going to play together. Uh-huh. And you know, she threw a little bit of like some embarrassing shade towards you.
Really?
Yeah. Obviously, lovingly. So I'm going to give you the opportunity.
It wasn't about my solo in the because I still think that I sounded great in.
I think it was
in the musical.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I was probably high for one. So I thought I sounded great.
You know, yes. How you just, right? Oh, yeah.
Actually, it wasn't. I probably was high. I was high. I was definitely high. But here's a little thing about Terry H. Funny story is I knew it.
Yeah.
All the way back in high school. I knew she was one of us. Mm-hmm. She didn't know she was one of us. I didn't even know I was one of us.
Yes.
But I would always, I was on the stage crew before I, you know, you just.
You hang out in the wings.
I wanted to be on the stage.
Yeah,
I
you hang out in the wings before you get your time in the spotlight.
But I wanted somebody to say, hey, come on down. Did you, you know, I wanted to sing quietly. Somebody, you got to really, I didn't want to just put myself out there.
Yeah.
So I joined the stage crew. So she, every, you know, we'd go up the catwalks, up into the catwalks to, you know, to get high. And I'd always be like, and she would always be watching. I'd say, Terry, you want? And she was so straight-laced. She was such a good student. She was, I mean, she was everything that I wasn't. But I could see it in her eyes that she wanted to go. And
yeah.
Like, come on, we're going. She's like, I can't.
Yeah.
And then in 1995, I'm in the parking lot of the Epic House.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was 96. And I was in the parking lot of Epic House. And here comes Terry. And I just turned around. And this is 18, 19, 20, 6 years later, 7 years later. Mm-hmm. I was like, I knew it. She was like, shut up. And an interesting story, she was actually there on a court slip. And this is some, and she'll probably argue with this, but I remember it very clearly. She was here on a court slip. And she went to court after 6 months on that court slip. And she came back and she was pissed. And I said, what are you pissed about? She said, God damn, George, he let me off, but he sends me to another year of these meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, you're already going to these meetings. I'm not like you guys, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And she went on, and through that next year on that court slip, everything changed.
Yeah.
You know, that's my recollection of it, Terry. So it's not yours. I apologize. But that's always been important to me because, again, I keep coming
now
back.
We have to set up a third podcast with you and Terry, just talking about the 80s and 90s. It'll be great.
The story, the moral of the story is keep coming back. And that's to anybody that's listening to this that's uncomfortable in the room, so they don't think, you know, it's our literature is very clear. It's not our job to tell you whether you're clean, whether you're not clean. It's not our job to tell you how to deal. We're just valid, stronger than that. We're a valid option.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to try this way of life, it's available to you. If you read our literature and not listen to what's, I mean, listen to what's said, but if you read our literature, it's a pure invitation.
Yeah.
It's a all-encompassing, open-minded invitation to try this mm-hmm. way of life. That
yeah.
what's available to us and what's happened in our lives is available to everyone. Mm-hmm. That any addict can stop using. Yeah. Any addict, stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live.
Mm-hmm.
And that's whatever you're using and whatever your background is and whatever your trauma is and whatever your race is, your color, your religion, none of that matters.
Mm-hmm.
And I go back to that literature on a regular basis because it's probably the most inclusive passages in that I've ever read.
Yeah.
It's very, very careful all the way through.
Oh, yeah.
Written by us.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 1980 to 83
in
sweat lodges, basically,
yep.
this book was written, and it's, yeah. So it's an incredible thing to be a part of.
Nice. All right. How is your disease manifesting in your life today?
Big three still. My eating, mm-hmm. smoking. I'm still dying by my own hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious that I'm dying by my own hand, that I'm not being good to myself in a physical sense, yet I still continue to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Thought processes, still from time to time doing things that I don't want to do and not understanding why that I do them, and then not doing things that I want to do and not understanding why I'm not doing them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still a lot of confusion in those areas.
Yep.
I've taken up a shoe fetish. I never thought I would ever say that.
Really?
I don't consider it a fetish. My foot hurts. My right foot. I literally buy shoes, and if they don't, then I just, you know, I have a lot of shoes right now.
Yeah.
But I can also have a lot of shoes.
Yeah.
And I mean, I have a lot of shirts that I don't wear because I don't send anything back,
mm-hmm.
and I order them online, and they don't fit, and I wind up giving them away mm-hmm. to, you know, as soon as somebody puts on 20
That's
pounds.
That's why we
I'm
keep
like,
Brad
hey,
around. So
you
he,
ever put on 20
yeah.
pounds, I got you. Right, right. Ah, Brad's a good option. I didn't even think about that.
Brad's a great option.
He's a great option.
Yeah.
He's smaller than me. He would fit all that stuff.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to get back to Brad. If I can get back to Brad, his weight.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
I know. That's terrible. That's my target. Brad is my target. He is my target weight. And And the truth is, the true answer to that question is as much as I know where it still manifests, I don't know where it manifests either.
Mm-hmm.
There's areas, I don't know how it's going to attack me. I don't know how it's
yep.
going to come after me. Again, mm-hmm. I don't know why I handle certain things with relative ease and struggle in certain areas. I don't know why a parking ticket for 25 years would turn into a boot on my truck every single time. You know, I don't understand these things about me. I'm ridiculous. I'm stupid. I'm all those things, but I'm also intelligent and smart. I just needed more tools, and I still need more tools to be able to deal with me and the things that I procrastinate on. I mean, that's what I was thinking about when Matt was sharing last night during the meeting is perhaps procrastination is one of your main character defects.
You're in good shape.
The answer for that, though, is in the steps. Finding mm-hmm. that out is in the steps. So how do you write all these things that I found in the steps were the exact things that kept me away from doing the steps. So
yeah.
And I was told 1,000 different ways from 1,000 different people, everything from work to steps or die to they've improved my life. I mean, I heard it softly. I heard it loudly. I heard
yeah.
it screamed. I heard it threatened.
Mm-hmm.
And still my disease, my brain, the way that I think managed to not think that it was that big a deal or there'll be time, I'll get to it.
Yep.
And then Kelly was sick. I had to be there for her and mm-hmm. all these reasons to not,
oh yeah,
you know, So I want to say to somebody some way to get it through their head, but nobody could get it through mine.
No.
Nobody could get it through mine.
Yep.
It wasn't through, and I hate to say that the literature's right in that area, it wasn't through, it was when the pain was great enough, and in my form that came, it didn't have to come that way. In my form, it came from a relapse. Mm-hmm. And when I came back, there was one thing that I needed to do differently, and that was to trust in the process of the steps and mm-hmm. trust in the process of sponsorship. Because that's another thing. You say, how does it matter? Still today, I'm the worst sponsee in the world. I consider myself a decent sponsor. I am a horrible sponsee. I will not call you if my ass is falling off.
Yep.
It's you know, I justify it because I have a group of friends that I can share anything with. And it's a reasonable justification.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing to have.
Yeah.
I've never used a sponsor correctly. Mm-hmm. It's never made sense to me. What makes sense to me is I have a problem, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
My natural response is not, and this is again the way that it matters, but it's still after all these years, my natural response is not call your sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
It's not pray about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, hey, you know, talk to your significant other about it. It's I'll figure it out. I got it.
Yep.
I got, you know, so there's a lot of very tricky, cunning, and baffling ways that my disease still is active in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the only positive thing of that is I'm aware of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Where at some point I wasn't aware of it anymore, and I lost the ability to ask for help, and everybody was coming to me, and I felt like the patriarch. I mean, that's what recovery did, and it was mm-hmm. a wonderful thing for my own family, who used to roll their eyes when I walked in the room, to come to me for, you know, for these things. And but then getting in a position where, without the knowledge and the tools that I still needed to improve,
mm-hmm.
I'd lost the ability to ask for help.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's really like the beauty of the network, in my opinion, because it's literally a collection of sponsors. Like if you're just counting on one person to like save your ass in those times, you're selling yourself short. Cause like we always make the metaphor about like tools in our toolbox and stuff like that. Then make your network as big and diversified as you possibly can. Yeah. So when you like, yeah, there's sometimes I don't call her because I'm like, I know somebody who has better stuff for this specific like thing. So literally a network is a collection of sponsors that we can utilize and tap into if we have the courage and wherewithal to pick up that phone.
Yeah. I was in a situation at work a couple of weeks ago. I had a young lady who didn't speak any English.
Hmm.
And I was trying to fix the problem. I said, how do I get a translator? I could answer all my ideas. And finally, I sent out to a group chat, hey, does anybody speak Spanish?
Mm-hmm.
And within 5 minutes, three different people got back and said, I don't. And I had this bombarded by these numbers
mm-hmm.
of people. I could have figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could have went on the way I was, but it wasn't my natural reaction to reach out for help. It took me a minute to get to, hey, you have this unbelievable network of people
mm-hmm.
That you can ask anything about. And if you ask, they're gonna help.
Yeah.
I used to have an old analogy in my head. You take like one of those long 3-inch screws
mm-hmm.
and you sink it into like mahogany and you leave like a quarter inch out.
Mm-hmm.
I will get that screw out with my bare hands, bloody. I will beat on it. I mean, I will get that screw out.
Yeah.
If I'm dead set on getting that screw mm-hmm. out, where I can say, hey, Jim, can I use your screwdriver?
Yep.
You know, can I use your drill? I mm-hmm. mean, there's all the alone by myself with no tools, I will get that fucking screw out. Can
I
press on here? I will get it out.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, the determination is a thing that I look at as an asset mm-hmm. in my life. And so it's taken too far where I will do it, I'll get it, I'll fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what
Determination can turn into stubbornness and a defect real quick. Yeah.
Well, that's actually, I don't know how we were doing on time, but that was Marcia.
We're getting close.
Yeah, Marcia it's probably one of the most valuable lessons. I think I had 3 years, and this is an older woman in recovery. And she was 60 at the time. She was celebrating 25 years, and she talked about being raised dependent on a man. She'd be being raised to be dependent on a man. And then coming into recovery, lo and behold, she became dependent on a man.
Mm-hmm.
And through her process of recovery, she set this goal to no longer be dependent
yep.
on a man. And she went to school and she She got a master's and a doctorate, and she wound up working for NASA or some ridiculous, mm-hmm. And she had accomplished this thing that she coveted the most, this independence from being reliant on a man. She paused, and I was so happy for her. It was like, this is an inspiring story. And she paused, and she said, and I can turn that thing that I love about myself, that thing that I coveted the most, I can turn that into, I don't need any fucking body.
Mm. Yep.
And I said, what did she just say? And that's the first time I ever realized I don't have to just be on guard against my character defects. I have to be on guard against my, what she was saying to me was any asset, anything I even like about myself taken too far.
Absolutely.
Becomes a defect.
Yes.
Well, it was all on the table then. And ironically, I was heading right into a sixth step at the time. It was like, Jesus. Oh, yeah. And I never considered anything like that. You know, so yes, empathy can turn into, I'll do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You don't have to do anything.
Yep.
Generosity can turn into where I'm being so generous and I'm hurting myself. Yep. Right. And I'm hurting myself. And I'm, all these things that I come to actually like, okay, these are the things that I.
Oh, I have a strong work ethic, but now I'm spending. Now I'm a workaholic and I'm. Right. A stranger from my wife and kids.
Right, so back to determination and follow through and loyalty and all those things that I love about myself can, if unchecked, can kill me.
Oh yeah,
they can literally kill me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the voice of screw those people. I don't need to go to meetings anymore. I knew to be when I relapsed after 12 years. I knew to be on guard against that stuff. Mm-hmm. I saw it take down so many people.
Yeah.
It was, I have responsibilities. I've made commitments. I've made promises. I have employees now. Yeah. I don't have time. It didn't come at me the way that I thought it was going to come at me.
Mm-hmm.
It still found a way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's, you talked about right sizing. It still will.
You know?
I don't know how it will come at me today. I just know that it will. And that's another reason why I keep my network strong around me. And that's not even true. I don't even know where my network came from. I don't know. It's not like I set out and was like, put all these wonderful people. I just have all these. When I've engaged in recovery, amazing people are around me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had some amazing people around me my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
I really have. I'm very blessed that way. And I want to engage.
Yeah.
You know, and I wanted to watch them fight this thing too and achieve things that, and I've seen so much here. I've seen so many people achieve things that they didn't know they wanted to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
It just goes back to when my disease comes today and says, you can't do this, you can't do that. That's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jim Smith said it one time. He said, real recovery's become, and I hated when he said it. I hated it when I said it, but he said, recovery's become very easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very easy. I have the disease of addiction. That's a effing liar. And then I have recovery who always tells me the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a choice of who I want to listen to.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. So.
I got one final question for you. You got to choose 1 out of 12. What is your favorite step and why?
1 out of 12.
Can only pick one.
Oh, that's not fair.
Yeah, you gotta pick one.
We're just talking about the second. That's beautiful. We're just talking about it. So I'm gonna pick one, but I'm gonna go through 2, 5, 10, 12 are wonderful. Mm-hmm. But for me, the one that I didn't expect to be. As much as 2 made a difference, and as much as, you know, coming to believe again and the people around me was important, that was to get me back in the chair. That was to inspire me to continue on with the steps.
Mm-hmm.
The big one for me was 5. Was
nice.
I was raised by a mother. I was raised by a sister. My emotions and feelings always went to a female. That's who I shared them with.
Mm-hmm.
To sit down with, I don't know why, but to sit down with a man who has known me for a long time and say, it's not that bad, but here it is.
Yeah.
I don't know why that made the difference that it made, but it did.
Yeah.
Just that realization in 5 that these things that have plagued me, that will continue, these things belong to me.
Yeah.
And I have an opportunity here to address these things. And it doesn't mean they're gone. And my sponsor even told me, Bill, you have to realize, I think I panicked at 7. I was like, they're not gone. They're sure. He said, Bill, some of these things will never be gone.
Yeah.
But to be greatly diminished.
Yes.
And that's been my experience.
And you'll be aware of them, and you'll get the tools to just have perspective on yourself and see yourself coming, so you know when you're acting in whatever unhealthy asset or character defect, you figure out the ways and ask for help on how to counteract that stuff to stay right-sized. All right, man. Well, we are about out of time, but I would love to thank you for joining me today, man. You did a fucking awesome job.
Thanks, man. Actually, how are you, David O?
I'm good, man. I just have a super busy day, and I that's the benefits of recovery is I got to show up for my sister and my mom a little bit later today, and then I have a sponsorship family meeting tonight. Just a whole bunch of stuff, and then obviously, trying to relieve my wife and from baby duties.
How old is the baby now?
About to be two, fat and happy, running around. He's insane. He has no fear, which is terrifying, but...
It's amazing, isn't it?
Oh, it's freaking cool.
Talk about the ripples.
Oh, yeah.
Look at the life ripples. Mm-hmm. That always amazed me about recovery.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give you one last quick minute to talk to anybody out there struggling, needing to hear a message of hope. What do you have to say directly to them?
Oh, that any addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. It's very simple. If you don't feel comfortable in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, keep coming back. If you keep coming back and you don't feel, talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. Find a counselor. Again, read anything in our literature about in the public relations. I don't know what to tell you. Just, it's a wonderful life not using. And then once I stopped using, I always thought that find a new way to live part, that third piece of that was an optional part.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's different today. And I know if I can do it, you can do it. If David can do it, if his daughter can be born, if, different, it's available to anyone. If your brain, if your mind, if your disease is telling you anything other than that, it's a liar.
Yep.
It's an absolute, positively, it's a liar. It's lying to you. Because for six years, it was lying to me about everything.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we would like to thank you again. And here at Podcast Recovery, we're aiming to expand the scope of support for recovering addicts. Accessibility and convenience of helpful services is paramount to combating addiction. We work to bring the message of recovery to every addict, wherever and whenever it is needed. We believe that a powerful voice of recovery should be obtainable, practical, and at the touch of a button. Every addict deserves to hear a message of hope, and Podcast Recovery is here to provide it. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. Go check out all our social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. For more information about us, go to podcastrecovery.com. Please join our Patreon, because we are self-supporting and need help keeping the mics on. But most importantly, everybody out there, please stay safe and stay clean.